Welcome to Health 101, a podcast by the Metro Omaha Medical Society. This season, we're focusing on the business of medicine. Physicians are trained in the art of caring for patients, but often there are gaps of learning when it comes to making business decisions. We hope this helps. Today on Health 101, we're going into the financial health of physicians. Like anyone, physicians can fall into spending pitfalls and make financial mistakes. But with the average debt of physicians leaving medical school sitting at almost $250,000, any missteps can have serious consequences. Joining me today to help smooth the road ahead for doctors, Chris Ensinger and Chad Rutar from Renaissance Financial. Okay, you guys, let's talk about at different phases of a physician's career in life, they need different things. So what considerations do you want them to be thinking about when they're 22, when they're, you know, and in each kind of phase of their lives?
Okay, I would say there's early stages, maybe middle stages, and then late stages. So I would say in the early stages, you try to create the habit. Just like anything else, the earlier you start, the easier it is long term. So I would say in your 20s or 30s, create the habit of saving. So by the time it's in your 40s or 50s, you've already created the habit. You do not need to create that wheel. Along the same lines, take advantage of the low income brackets that you're going to be at a younger ages. With physicians especially, their income is going to potentially grow throughout their lifetime. So there are things you can be doing in your 20s and or 30s that the IRS will allow you to do based on your income, i.e. Roth IRAs, where if you're in the 12 or 22% tax bracket, take advantage of them, because in your later stages, you may be in the 37% tax bracket, not be able to do that, and it makes more sense to do more pre-tax deductions. So I would say more than anything else, just take advantage and create the habit early on. So that's in your early phases. Middle phases, your income's starting to get a little bit higher. You want to maximize your tax deductions. So maximize your 403B, 401K. There may be some type of deferred compensation plan that your employer allows you to take advantage of. But on the flip side, with the post-tax bucket, there's three types of dollars, really, Carol, also, too. Is there's pre-tax. So if you're in the higher tax bracket, you definitely want to have some proceeds there. There's after-tax money, so it's kind of a pay-as-you-go system, very similar to real estate taxes that you pay on your home. And then the no-tax bucket. Chances are, if you're in the higher income tax bracket, you cannot get into that no-tax bucket. There may be some workarounds, but you want to make sure that you're planning in that phase of your life so later on down the road, you don't wake up at 55, 60, or 65 and you have all pre-tax money or all post-tax money. So try to balance that tax triangle out. And then late stages, you go from a accumulation phase in your 20s, 30s, and then 40s. When you get into your 50s and 60s, you go from accumulation phase to distribution phase. So accumulation phase, you can make some mistakes along the way. You just kind of keep throwing money at it. But in the distribution phase, you really can't. So restructuring your portfolio, having some income inside of your portfolio, and laddering out CDs or bonds. So if we have a 2008 or 2009 happen again, or a COVID or a 2022 time frame, you have 3 to 5 years money lined out in front of you for the distribution versus accumulation phase.
If you are carrying a high debt load, because I think physicians who are coming out of school and training, they are these days, it's a house payment for most people. Are you better off to think about, when you think about the debt load, the phase of life, buying their house, getting married, having children? Saving sometimes feels like the last thing on the to-do list, and the first thing to do is to try to get rid of the debt load. Is that the strategy? Because you're just, you know, what? How do you balance those two in people's minds? Because I think people are afraid.
It's a very tricky to look at that, because you are carrying a lot of debt. But realizing, trying to create a habit of getting into saving. I would say do the things that make sense. For instance, if you have some type of retirement account through work where they're going to match you dollar for dollar, say you put in 3% or 4% and you're going to get the company match of 3 or 4%, you can double your money. In that aspect, it makes all the sense in the world. Also, too, it depends upon the debt. So when these physicians are coming out of school, the debt's going to be tied into some type of interest rate depending on what's prevalent rates are. So they may come out of school with a high debt load but low interest rates. So as an example, you know, prior to COVID, interest rates were very low. So some of those debt rates are very low. And so if your debt is at 2 or 3%, it's an okay debt to have. But if your debt is at 5, 6, or 7%, it's hard to have an investment that's tried to outpace that. So I think it depends on timing of the debt, the interest rate. But once again, just take advantage of the things that where you can literally double your money by saving 3%, you're really saving 6% because the company's going to match you dollar for dollar.
And I think you have to consider when you're working with the residents or physicians going out into practice, what makes them sleep at night? Because if that debt hanging over them for the student debt is going to not make them sleep, not make them feel comfortable, then trying to pay that down or looking at any of the opportunities to refinance.
You also always talk about some of those big insurances as in the help you sleep at night mm-hmm. thoughts. So take us through the lifespan of a doctor. When do they need to do some of those in place, even if they have budgetary constraints because they're trying to save and they're trying to get their lives launched and they're
sure. I would recommend that they, when you are in residency, that they're looking at first their disability. Everybody's covered by the liability through the university that they're at, the schooling, so forth. But they need to look at a disability policy, get a high quality plan so that they can increase that policy, has future insurability, so that they never have to prove their health. Because if they're healthy now, might as well get that taken care of. And something that will grow with them with their income is what they're going to need to do. I would recommend definitely that they buy term insurance during their training years. A lot of times we see residents will not buy any life insurance and they're looking at the Roth IRA, getting started on that. That's fine, except you always have to prove your health for life insurance. You cannot buy without going through some type of underwriting. So if they know that they're healthier now, then they should go ahead and secure some type of term insurance. And when you buy term insurance, you want to make sure that you're buying a quality plan that has great convertibility because you never know at what point you might become uninsurable. So trying to take care of all the things that could make you have limits on you as far as getting insurance, either disability, life, that type of thing.
What about long-term care? It is the topic I hear around a lot of tables right now. If you are caring for an elderly parent or an aging parent, if you are hitting that sandwich generation and people are talking about what's in place, is it too late by the time you're starting to have that realization?
It could be. I mean, there's only so many dollars that everybody has. So when we're looking at that, having somebody that's in their late 20s, early 30s, 40s buying long-term care, unless they have really excess cash in order to do that to get their insurability taken care of. Otherwise, we would probably say take care of your disability and get a policy that covers you at least to age 65, if not 67. School of thought for the 67 is you can always change it back to 65, but you can't go to 67 without proving health. And so long-term care, I would say, comes into play more when somebody's in their early 50s. Hopefully they'd still be insurable, but that's when we start talking. If a physician comes to us and says, hey, I want to buy a more disability and they're 50 some years old, we'd really have to question them depending upon how much they already have of disability, whether or not a better play is to go ahead and secure a long-term care plan.
At what point could you get rid of disability and take care of long-term health? Because I'm assuming at some point your career, you banked what, and you're probably not going to suffer any losses if something happens.
I think the problem that some of the physicians forget about is that just because you're disabled or you need, long-term care, it's doesn't mean you're not going to retire that way. And so you have to make sure that if you have experienced something like a long-term care or a disability, that when can you get rid of it is when you can afford to live out your retirement years. And if you had a disability, the payment that would be going towards that wouldn't erode your retirement plan. So you want to make sure you have enough. And there's different schools of thought as far as dollar amount, but everybody's dollar amount is a little bit different.
You've seen every scenario come across your guys' desks. You've had conversations with physicians throughout their lifespan. The biggest mistakes they make, or the biggest mistakes you've seen them make that you worry and you've seen it and you go, oh, I've got to tell some other people not to do that again.
I think one of the biggest mistakes is outreaching for help more than anything else. They get busy, try to do it by themselves, and that's okay. Some people like doing their investments and insurance by themselves, but there's only so many hours allocated in a given day. So if they have rounds all day long or in surgery all day long, they don't they don't have the time to really address it. So just like anything else, hiring professionals and having those individuals step in and then delaying, thinking they'll get around to it, you know, get out of residency, get into practice. It's something that maybe when I make an X amount of dollars, I'll address it. To the comment earlier of just really creating that habit early on and getting in that mindset and along those same lines, it's saving in percentages. So for instance, a young physician may be coming out and I'm going to use easy math. They're saying that he or she's making $100,000 and they're saving $10,000. Well, that's 10% of their income. If their income crescendos up and 5 years down the road, they're making 300, but still only saving $10,000, it's only just north of 3%. So save in percentages. So as your income goes up, naturally your spending is going to go up, but you also want to increase your savings as well. So I would say save in percentages, not in dollar amounts. So as you spend more, you save more as well.
I think the other thing, don't count on your employer benefits that they're the best or that they're going to always take care of you. From the benefits department, maybe they feel that the quality is there. But I think physicians have sometimes a tendency to forget to really look into to see what the definitions are when it comes to disability, when it comes to if they're offering life insurance, if they're offering any type of legal services within the group that they can take advantage of there. I think that's important. I think they think that their benefits are always going to be the best for them. Physicians themselves have a different need than most other employees, usually within any type of employer. And I think that they need to be aware of that. The other thing is we see a lot of movement right now. We're seeing a lot of physicians go from one practice to another practice. I think it's very important when you're doing that to make sure that you are having somebody review your contract, especially an attorney. An attorney is going to look at all the legal things and look at the non-compete, so forth, but also have somebody that is familiar in the financial world, like ourselves, that are familiar at looking at physician contracts. And we're going to look at it from a benefit side and what's going to happen and what you might lose, where you're going, if you're picking up something better or worse. And I think that's really important. I think the non-competes are extremely important to know. We see a lot of movement and people are going, I got to either, quit my, the practice and retire for a little bit until the non-compete clears, or is it too restrictive that it won't stand up in court? So I think those are kind of the areas that I would say most physicians just assume that everybody's going to be on their side, and they're not.
Well, and benefits vary so widely. So what the match at one institution is at 5%, maybe only 3%, and you've got to think through how to make up that difference, or if you're going to make up that difference, disability insurance mm-hmm. changes. And I assume when you walk away from one institution that you don't necessarily are insurable at the next institution. Is that a correct, or should you be?
Well, group benefits, usually depending upon the size of the institution, or employer, group benefits, usually they come without any underwriting as long as you sign up within a certain number of days. Usually that's 30 days, but sometimes people forget to look at what the waiting period is. So somebody may say that, you're not going to be eligible for any benefits for 6 months or 1 year. I've seen contracts where disability they're not even considered to be able to get on a group plan for 1 year. So then what do you do? And so do you have your own individual? I always think it's best to have individual, even if you take the group or you have group, just because it's clearer definitions. Same with the life insurance. The conversion off of a plan, you don't want to have to do that because it's very expensive. So find out when you're going to be eligible for the next. And that's another reason for having individual. I always say having individual products yourself just makes it so that you can have that movement and not worry between practices.
Financially, if they're moving around as much as they seem to be these days, as physicians seem to be, at what point is it better to leave things at some institutions, or is it never good to leave it at the institution and carry it, roll it, move it?
There's pros and cons associated with it. I would say leaving it at institution, the pro associated with it is, I call it the Costco discount, because there may be hundreds of millions of dollars inside of that plan, where if you roll it out, you're standalone. The drawback to that is going to a restaurant. It's very much a menu. You're going to, on average, have 15 to 20 different investment options to deal with. And then if you move it to an individual account, it's a la carte. It's wide open. So many times the a la carte menu may be a little bit more expensive, but the diversification you can bring with that will offset those costs or gains. And also, too, just keeping track of it. I've had many clients over the years forget they've had an account, and all of a sudden they get a notification that they're 62 or 65 and they have this account floating out there. So at some point in time, if you know every 3 to 5 years, every 5 to 7 years, you have a tendency of kind of moving from institution to institution, I would just have one type of quote unquote master account where that every time you move, that account just gets fed, because at some point in time, it's going to be that way. When you step back, when you retire, you just want to be able to track one or two accounts versus 8 or 10.
I am getting a lot of questions about physicians as they're finishing up their careers and about how do they know that they're financially set? How do they know that they can walk away from their practices and that they're okay? You know, and I know you say the numbers differ for everybody mm-hmm. and depends on how they live, but is there, you know, I think I've heard you, Chad, talk about, do you take Social Security at 64, 70, you know, with the added dollars? Do you take different insurance options? What should you be thinking about as you're starting to contemplate those decisions?
On the Social Security front, it's all based on longevity. So, you know, the joke is, you tell me when you're going to die and I'll tell you when you should take Social Security. So there's usually a break-even point between 78 and 82. And if you have spouses that are the same age, so one of those two is if they're going to make it past 82, we say, listen, wait till full, you know, full Social Security age. But taking a step back even before that, in the accumulation phase, kind of brought up earlier, you can make a lot of mistakes along the way. When you get to the I want to retire distribution phase, there's no more redos. So take your retirement extremely seriously. I would say at least minimum of 10 years, maybe in 15 years out, sit down and have some type of financial plan that is going to project the fact that you're saving X amount of dollars at a based on return, what it's going to look like at 62, 65, 67. Is it a taxable account? Is it tax-free? All those factors coming into play, because there's software that is out there. The vast majority of 401ks, you can jump on their website and kind of play around with those tools, or many of your institutions, I know we have the software that will project it out and is tax sensitive. So when you take that first step into retirement, it's a sure-footed step. It's not a, I hope this goes okay. It's no, this is a done deal. So I just think, just like anything else, being proactive on that and then addressing all the pitfalls along the way to make sure you have a solid financial plan.
Yeah, I think also some other things to, what insurances are you going to need? We find that a lot of physicians are holding off on their retirement because of the health insurance, mostly the health insurance. And so they're not able to retire like they thought they would at 60 because of health insurance. So if they can get to a point where maybe there's still COBRA that will get them to that 65, then that's fine, or to that retirement age. The other thing is long-term care. We talked about that earlier. Long-term care, can be a very devastating financial situation for you, your family. And I think having a high quality long-term care plan is really important. It eases your family's mind, knowing that you have one. As far as it's a gift. I think I've gone through it recently, and it's just a gift to the family members when you have something like that, your children, because then it takes that off the table, that worry for them. And then the type of long-term care plan that you'd want, we favor more the indemnity plans rather than reimbursement plans. So make sure that who you're working with, an advisor, knows the differences and knows what it's all about so they can explain it to you for the long-term care.
And at some point, because I had this discussion with some retired physicians this morning, is you have mandatory distribution at certain that suddenly makes your taxable income problematic. And I hear some doctors talking about trying to get rid of dollars because it's all hitting at one time.
Yes. So required minimum distribution, it used to be a 70 and a half. Now it's 73. And depending upon your age, they're moving it to 75. So that software that we alluded to, it will project what your required minimum distributions are going to be. And so a good financial plan along with it should, some type of CPA or accountant should be involved. As an example, let's say you do have a physician that he or she retires at 60. So they go from a very high income tax bracket to a much lower tax bracket. Sitting down with a CPA, you can do projections on that traditional IRA. It's all pre-tax, and convert pieces of it to a Roth IRA So you're in a lower tax bracket. You convert those pieces to a Roth IRA. The Roth IRA is not subject to required minimum distributions. And if you're looking at generational wealth, the fact that that Roth IRA can go to the next generation and the next generation has 10 years to let that thing grow before they take it out, it's an absolutely powerful tool. So it definitely, you've got to take a look at all those different nuances with reference to the retirement picture.
Why do you think it's so different for doctors compared to everyone else? I think a lot of doctors say, well, when I sit at the dining room table for the holidays with my extended family, I have lawyers, I have corporate execs, I have business people, and they want to talk about it all, and they feel like they're all on even playing fields. Is it? When they talk about their future planning and financial planning.
I would say with physicians, what I found with physicians is a lot of them, when they look at retirement, it's very gray, meaning they enjoy what they do. They got into medicine because they have the joy of medicine. So the thought of retirement almost very similar to an attorney. I'll do it till I can't, till I physically can't, or I'm not having fun anymore. So maybe it just doesn't get put on the things to do list because the mindset is I'm just going to continue to do this until I can't. Also, too, I think it's time constraint. So, you know, there's jobs, careers, and lifestyles. A job is you go to work. You may not like it, but it's a job. A career is, hey, I'm 8 to 5. This is what I, you know, what I'm going to do for my career. A physician is a lifestyle. I mean, all my friends that are physicians, never fails. Very much similar to the finance world. You're at Thanksgiving, you're over the holidays. One of your friends is a physician going, hey, I got a question for you. It always comes up. So you don't have the time that maybe somebody just has a job or a career. This lifestyle, it engulfs you, it takes you. And so sometimes you got to just put yourself in front of that line and go, hey, I just need to address this because if it's not going to get done now, it's never going to get done.
And I think sometimes physicians, because they're contacted by a lot more advisors, people wanting to give them advice, and it just kind of, they just kind of throw their hands up half the time and say, I'm just not going to deal with stuff. And so I'm going to wait and try to find when's a good time for me to invest in this, or when's a good time for me to do this or pull the plug on retirement. They are contacted by a lot of different advisors and they get a lot of bad advice. And so, you know, it's just finding that right person that can give them good advice and have their comfort level be where it should be. And knowledge. You know, I always try to tell the physicians and residents, I want to educate you, but I want to educate you for the comfort level that you're when dealing with us, not so that you totally understand it, because just like I come to you as a patient, I've got to have comfort level in what you're doing, but I'm never going to understand what you're fully going to be doing when we have this surgery or something like that. So I think that's really important. I think that is why physicians sometimes just get overwhelmed and then just kind of, you know, check out on this side of it, because they're so good at doing medicine that they, you know, are a little gun shy on the other side.
If they finally say, okay, I listened to Chad and Chris, you're right, I need help, what should they be asking the people, the financial people? You know, they should be interviewing them, much like, you know, they're interviewing an employee, right? Or a partner, potential partner. What is it you want them to be asking? What questions are they not asking, or should they be asking?
I think background, we'll backtrack 1 second. I think hands down, they should interview 2 or 3 advisors. Get a feel for, you know, how the advisor operates, how their firm operates. Is it a financial plan based, not product based? You know, and really just like if I go in to see a physician, the job of an advisor is to tell an individual whether they're healthy or not. So we're not going to do our clients any good if we say, hey, yeah, you're absolutely doing great, when they're really not. So just some honesty behind it as well.
I think see if their advisor asks them questions, you know, about themselves, getting to know them, getting to know their likes and dislikes. What's their goals in life? If an advisor doesn't ask and get to know you personally and how you react to things and what's your comfort level, what are you looking for in an advisor? Besides the questions, it's hard for them to know what to ask. I think it's very hard. So I think us asking questions of them, that we should take interest in them, and also how much we educate them. I think if an advisor is just all they do is say, you need to go into this product, you need to do this, then maybe that's not the right advisor. They need to really know that there's a trust level. You have to build a trust level with any of them.
I sometimes feel like when I listen to physicians talk about this, that they feel like they get to a certain level of financial success. And all these other advisors want them to change and question what they're doing in their investing strategies. And I can see sometimes some of them wanting to change because they feel like that's maybe a better fit. But I also wonder about the long-term relationship, because the person you started with kind of should know what your end game is, or should know you along the way and what you've chosen. One versus the other in terms of, should you reevaluate your portfolio? Should you be reevaluating, and how often?
Well, yes, you need to reevaluate your portfolio, but I think you need to reevaluate the relationship along the way. And it's not uncommon that you can outgrow an advisor. Some advisors will specialize in certain niches or certain areas that he or she, the not the patient, but the physician may outgrow their comfort level. So, you know, especially if they become successful, now you're dealing with much more estate planning issues, tax concerns. You know, you're it's a different area. It's going up and beyond the portfolio. And also, too, is knowing the physician, he or she, along the way. For instance, the question came up earlier, what's some of the biggest mistakes? There is a financial component to retirement, but also, what are you going to do in retirement? What are your hobbies? What are your dreams? Are you going to travel? Are you going to take up bow and arrow? I mean, whatever it may be, you got to have some type of hobby, because I've seen many individuals retire and they have no idea what to do. So they've got to create some type of reason to get up every morning in retirement, or it's going to be a very short-lived retirement.
And then you see them coming back after a year of being out there and they're just bored. So what do? They get back into it, trying to find something. Maybe they can pick up, you know, some different shifts during a month or something like that. But it's because they probably didn't think through or had their advisor talk to them, you know, what hobbies do you have when you do retire? What are you going to do with yourself?
So when you talk about that 10-year ahead of retirement, that's a great time to be thinking about what's your step down. Do you go from full-time to part-time? And that way, is that a good place to be? Is that sustainable for you? Do you need more money because you're going around the world and your travel fund now is way bigger than your income fund used to be?
100%, because it's not uncommon if you're in your peak earning years. Sometimes you really don't look at your spend on a monthly basis, because you know there's a lot of assets coming in and a lot of outflow going out. So you really don't focus on your budget. If you had to sit down, track your credit cards, track your debit cards, what your spend is on a monthly basis, that can be a very daunting task. And quite frankly, sometimes people just don't want to deal with it. As long as the accounts are going up and I have more than I did last year, I'm okay. So really dialing in on that. And also too, if they're doing their job and they're financially successful, your assets should be going up and your debt should be going down. So personally, a person gets into retirement, I don't want them to have a lot of debt. If we can eradicate a lot of the debt and realize that all income coming into them can go out versus income coming in, then we have to carve off 20-30% for debt. That makes it much more difficult. So it's one less thing to worry about. But really, yeah, that 10 to 15 years ahead of time, starting to figure out what is my spend, and then maybe, yeah, more money is going to go towards, you know, travel, but less money is going to go towards eating out locally because we're not going to be here. So just realizing where the dollars coming in and where the dollars are going out.
Well, and I think an advisor needs to invest in, you know, finding out what their health is about. I mean, especially if you're switching from one advisor to another, and they talk about replacement of certain insurance products, that type of thing, finding out what their health is about beforehand. I think that all advisors should include husband and wife if they're married, so that they're all part of the whole planning process instead of excluding them in any way. Because you can deal with one spouse that's the doctor, and then one physician, and then their spouse isn't involved, and they've got a whole another idea of what retirement might look like. And so I think it gives you a better picture of retirement from both perspectives.
It's a lot. It's a lot to think about at any given time. And I know it keeps people up at night at every stage of their lives, what the financials and how the X's and O's line up. And do you have any advice for when you should say, don't overthink it, go to bed and sleep well?
Well, that's a hard one.
Yeah,
and every year it changes. Like, for instance, you go back in COVID 2020, not only deal with the health side, but the financial world was in turmoil. 2022, worst stock and bond market last 150 years. You can always give yourself an excuse to get worked up over it. But, you know, in looking at myself, I have a personal physician. When I go visit him every 6 months to get my blood work, I sleep easier the next day knowing, like, hey, my physical health is fine. So if you've got your bench strength lined out, if you have an attorney, you have an accountant, right? You have an advisor. If you have your bench strength built out, you should be able to sleep in that a little bit easier, knowing that if those three individuals are talking back and forth to make your quote unquote financial world okay, it should help you sleep at night. And if you can't, contact one of those individuals, say, hey, here's my thoughts, here's my concerns, and just kind of get it off your mental palate onto somebody else. And sometimes just getting it out in the world and just flushing it out makes me sleep easier.
Well, and all three of those different professionals should work together to make you successful in retirement. And if they're not, then you've got a problem. If your, you know, financial advisor is not talking to the attorney or the CPA, that's probably not the right financial advisor, because you do need, it's a collaborative effort. We're not CPAs, we're not attorneys, and nor are they, vice versa. And so I think if collaboratively everybody works together, is the best thing. And I think also going into those later years after in retirement, as you're been in it maybe a little bit, just make sure your family members know where everything's at in case something does happen, who you work with, because a lot of times they don't. So that's really important.
Really great advice, you guys. I hope that the people who listen to this take a deep breath and know it's going to be okay, that if they have the right people on their side, that they can sleep better and that they don't have to worry so much about the future. They're going to worry anyway, but hopefully this lessens. So thank you, both Chad and Chris, for your time today. And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time. Thank you so much for joining us. For more information and to listen to past episodes, please visit us at omahamedical.com and search for podcast.
A Huda Media Production.
The information shared in this podcast is for informational purposes only. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast belong solely to the presenters and do not represent the thoughts, advice, or opinions of the Metro Omaha Medical Society. The information contained in this podcast should not serve as the basis for any medical treatment and is not intended to be a substitute for actual medical advice. Before making changes to your healthcare plan or a loved one's, always consult with a healthcare professional.